This is Lance and Fisher Body Historical Team. Today is June 5th, 2006. It's approximately 9 a.m. on this Monday morning. We're at the UAW Local 602 Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. First, we'll state the names of the others present in the room.
Jerry Smith.
And I'm Cheryl McCoy.
And Dick Budd.
Dick, would you spell your name for us, please?
Yes, B-U-D-D.
And what is your address?
828 Broken Ridge, Lansing, 48917.
And are you married? Do you have children?
Yes. I'm married 46 years, have 4 children, 7 grandchildren.
And where were you born and raised?
Lansing, Michigan.
What did your parents do?
My mother was a housewife, and my father was an insurance salesman.
And what is your educational level?
Graduated from Sexton High School and had 2 years at LCC.
And were you in the military?
Yes, I was in the Army for 2 years.
And what else did you do before hiring into Fisher Body?
I worked as a lab tech at the state of Michigan when I got out of the service. And then I went from there to the Home Dairy downtown and was a grocery manager there until I hired into Fisher Body.
You said that you went to Sexton School. Do you have any memories of the plant and going to school at Sexton?
Yeah, we used to look in the windows to see what the next year's product looked like. The windows were all open on the Verlinden side, and we'd go up and peek in there and talk to the guys once in a while when we came by.
What did you think of the plant being a teenager?
Oh, I just thought it was a big old plant, and I ran track and played football, and it was always part of the neighborhood. And the guys used to come out the gate and watch the football games once in a while.
Why did you hire into Fisher Body?
It was probably money. I was working like 80 or 90 hours a week at the Home Dairy, and my mother-in-law suggested I go over to Fisher Body because that's where she was at, and I did. I remember, I think I hired in at $3.02 an hour, but that was a big deal back then in 64.
So you hired in 64 and you were already married. Do you think that your aunt helped you get into the plant? I'm sorry, your mother-in-law.
Yeah, she did. Absolutely. She got me an application. I filled it out, took it in, and I think it was Jerry Brooks at that time was the guy that took the applications. And what was nice about it, I found out through the years that when you had a family member refer you, they kind of checked on you to make sure you were doing a good job. And we kind of lost that as the years went on. And when the state started hiring for us, we got a bunch of crappy people. But when the family thing was there, we had a lot of good people.
How old were you when you hired in?
I must have been 24.
What shift and department did you first work?
I worked second shift, trim shop.
Do you remember the job or the people that were around you?
Oh, yeah. Supervisor was Al Dulhaney and Larry Dulhaney and Al Conley were my supervisors. I hired in with Manuel Harada, and we both got a molding job where we had to jump in the trunk of every car and screw down the moldings. And when a convertible came along, we had to drive 12 bolts apiece on each side of the convertible. So we were in and out of every single car at 43 cars an hour.
Do you remember what you were making convertibles? What kind of car?
Yeah, it was 88 back then, in 64, I think. I was always on the B line. They had an A line, a B line. The B line was the big car line. The A line was the Cutlass line.
And do you remember, were there any pranks pulled on you when you first hired in?
No, I can't really say that. We had a good team there, and everybody kind of worked together and helped each other. I can remember some pranks pulled on me when I was a supervisor, but not when I hired in.
And what kind of lunches and breaks do you remember?
I think we carried our lunch back then. I'm sure we did. And we had a wagon break, 12-minute break in the morning and afternoon. And we had a relief man come around and give us another break. So we had plenty of breaks.
When you first hired him, what did you think of the plant and the people?
I liked it. Got along well with everybody.
Did you ever get lost in there?
No, I was pretty familiar with the front part where I had to come into trim, so I just stayed in trim. I didn't go to paint, I didn't go to body shop. I just stayed by my job until I learned the rest of the plant.
What was the environment like?
Well, there was no ergonomics, I can tell you that. It was dark. I can remember not being well lit, and especially the body shop. It was real dark down there, and I kind of wanted to stay away from that place. And it was smoky down there. All the guns and stuff, ventilation wasn't that great. But trim was always a nice, clean part, and I lucked out and got in trim.
How long did you work on the line before becoming a supervisor?
I think it was 2 years. About 2 years on the line. Back then they had utility people, and I was on a job, like I said, to start it out. And I tried to learn all the other jobs around here because I found out if you knew a lot of jobs, you could work double shifts. So every Friday I'd work a double shift, especially if we worked Saturday, and made extra money that way.
Seems like you remember the last time we tried to do this interview, you told your wife if you made so much money.
Oh, yeah. If I made $10,000 in 1 year, we'd be millionaires. And I actually did that the first year. And the second year, it was like $12,000. And then when I went on salary, I actually took a cut because I couldn't work double shifts on salary. And she says, why don't you go back to hourly? And I said, no, we're not going to do that.
What was the process of becoming a supervisor like? Was there an interview process, or did they just put you on?
There was a kind of an informal interview process, and then there was a test that you had to take. And I did that and passed the test. I sweated all weekend worried about did I pass or not, and I came in the next week. And I think it was a Thursday, they called me in the office and said, yep, you passed the test. We're going to put you on salary Monday. I think it was the 15th or something. They did it 1st or 15th. So I came in Monday on a night shift, and they said, wear a shirt and tie. So I wore a shirt and tie, and that was it. They gave me a group, and luckily I knew all the jobs, and I knew a lot of the people. So I kind of got along okay that way, but there was no one with me. I just was there. Back then, we had to punch in and out with cards, so I didn't have to do payroll. And there were a lot of things that were different. But it took a while to learn it, but got along okay.
So you had absolutely no break-in?
No.
On that job?
No.
Dick, would you tell us a little bit about being a first-line supervisor in the plant?
Yes. You were responsible for quite a number of people. And I can remember that we had to drive a lot of screws back then in the car. And motors were a big deal. And the type of screw from a certain vendor was a big deal. In other words, when you self-drive a screw, if you have a good vendor, which was shake-proof, they'd go in real easy. If you had a different vendor, it was hard for the employees. And we were, I'm talking like driving 10 screws in a wheelhouse molding on every car. The drips were snap-on, but the they had a retainer that held the weather strip. That took like 14 or 18 screws. So we drove a lot of screws in my area, and we were constantly trying to hide the good ones and give the other shift the bad ones. And we didn't have like quality control or people that would be responsible for incoming parts back then. So you kind of had to fight the battle on your own. And like I said, we had a lot of people, and there was a PA system, and the general foreman used to stand down at the end of the line, or the repair supervisor, and call you down to repair because somebody missed a screw or somebody did this or that. And I remember one prank when I was a new supervisor that was pulled on me. We went to lunch, and he had a half-hour lunch then. And I came back from lunch, and I got a call from the supervisor one area up from me, saying that somebody had picked the car off the truck and turned it around so it was coming down the line backwards. This is a second shift thing. So that meant everybody had to run around the opposite side of the car and do their job. So that ended up to be a repair job, obviously, but we found out who did it and took care of them. But that was the biggest prank that was ever pulled on me, I think. And my general foreman, Marshall Dean at that time, and Johnny Powers, they couldn't believe we had a car coming down the line backwards, because it took a lot to pick a car off a dock, the truck, and turn it around. But that's probably the worst prank I ever had. We also had utility people, and we always try to make those people help them out, because you never knew what was going to be absent back then. And we had a couple doctors, Dr. Geller and Esther Jackson. Both of those doctors would give out slips. And when you have a doctor's statement, you kind of had to let the guy go or gal go. But through the years, we found out that we started keeping all the doctor's statements. We finally got Dr. Geller with the IRS, because we kept so many statements. He'd just charge people $10 and never look at them, just $10 to write a statement. So we got him through the IRS. So that was a big plus for us, a lot of supervisors, because that was always a Friday night thing or Saturday night thing. A lot of the women that hired in to trim, because of motors, most of them were secretaries in the past. And we didn't have any ergonomic thing, but we tried the best to put them on a non-driving job, you know, with screws. But seniority wouldn't always let us do that. So I remember girls coming in and having hands swelled up like you wouldn't believe. And there was nothing we could do for them back then. We just had to say, if you can't make it, you can't make it. I know Arlene Parker was one of them, and so was Pat Zoo, and both of them turned out to be supervisors in our factory, but it was hard. We used to try to give them extra relief. Used to try to do a lot of things to help them, but ergonomics was not number one back then.
What did you think made a good employee?
First of all, I'd ask a new employee, what's your background? Where'd you come from? And if they were a farm kid, I would take them in a minute, because they were used to working. I always try to get all the farm kids. Like I said, a lot of them were secretaries or whatever, and they were okay also. But I like the farm kids, because they were they could take a lot of beating.
Just hard workers.
Real hard workers. Yep.
So you were a supervisor for what, 8 years? 10 years?
I think I was a supervisor for like 2 or 2.5, 3 maybe.
Oh, really?
And then I became general foreman after that. So then I had all the supervisors under me. I had hard trim, and I had the B-line.
What was the difference from being a supervisor to a general supervisor?
I had to deal with the union more, and I had to make sure that people, each supervisor would call in and say, you know, I need a person, or I need two or three or whatever. You had to cover the line within the first 5 minutes, and you never wanted to hold the line for absenteeism. So the first shift was a nightmare every day or every night for about the first half hour, getting everybody covered. And after that, it went pretty smoothly. But worked on quality every single night. Probably looked at 100, 200 jobs every night for quality. And I tried to go around and talk to people, and especially the ones that were absent. I'd always say, glad you could make it today. Where the hell were you yesterday? And I did that to everybody that was absent. I knew everybody in my shift, both shifts, by first name in my area. I used to walk around and talk to them. Not always about absenteeism, but I knew about their families. I knew about their kids and sports and stuff. I think that was an important part of the job, just knowing your people and knowing a lot about them helped out a lot. And they tell you things that would other people wouldn't tell you, I guess. But it was like a big family to me in there.
Did you, you said you worked with the union more as a general foreman. What did you think about the union?
I started out with a couple of, Al Holmack, who's a really tough union guy. And I started out from scratch and said, okay, you're going to get me on a lot of things because I don't know, you know, the contract like you do. But if we work together, I think we can accomplish a lot. And Al was a tough old guy, but when I came across like that, him and I used to, at the beginning of the shift, he would come in, and after I got my manpower set, I'd ask him if he had any problems or if I had any problems, and we'd talk about it every single day and have a cup of coffee, and that was unheard of back then. I mean, it was us and them. That's the way I always heard it, but I didn't think that was the right way to do business, so we got along really good. We did a lot of things. I'd tell them we're going to pull manpower and where, and that was unheard of back then, but I said, you know, the job is light. We're going to do this, and we're going to spread the work out. I know you've got to write grievances if you have to, but this is the way we're going to do it. And I just thought being in contact with them and not letting them stay in the office down there and me being in my office and not communicating, I guess communication was a big thing. I got along good with the union, real good.
You were a general supervisor about 1977, 1978, when a lot of women came into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
How did that change the environment, or did there was there no effect?
Yeah, it changed a lot of things. Basically, language was terrible in the shop, and we tried to calm that down because a lot of the women that came in were younger and were scared, never been in a shop before, never been around older men, and you know, we had a lot of problems with getting the guys to not talk shop talk in front of the ladies. I said, just act like that's your daughter next to you, and would you be talking like that, or wouldn't you be talking like that? So that was one of the tough things. That and ergonomics, I think, were the two toughest.
So tell us a little bit more about some of the things that you remember about the plant. I know that you were involved in the talent show, PDTs. Kind of run through your work experience at Fisher Body for us.
Okay. Yeah, the talent show was always an Oldsmobile thing. And got together with some Oldsmobile people and said, why won't we include Fisher Body? I'm sure we got a lot of talent over there. So we started out the first year, and it was wonderful. I couldn't believe all the talent, both at Oldsmobile and Fisher Body. We had tryouts, and we'd have like 75 X, and we had to cut it back to like 45 because of time limit, you know. And some of the ones we cut were great, but we had to, and I had judges, and I always try to get at least Miss Michigan to come and judge, and other dignitaries from around the city and stuff, old teachers, and just a lot of different people, and we had a good time. But the talent show was wonderful. Also, we had PDT people. That's the biggest thing that made our job, or made our car so good right off the bat.
What does PDT mean?
Product development team. And what these people did, well, actually, I was on every pilot program all the way through. Okay, I was a pilot manager for a trim or body or whatever area it was in. I was a pilot guy. And I always had a team of 7 or 8 people that were hourly folks. And the union and I picked them. And we didn't necessarily pick them by seniority, which was a big deal. I said, I want the best people we have for the job, regardless of seniority. So we had an interview process. And we had several things we'd ask them. And the union was there, and I was there, and we interviewed them. And I'm talking like 50 or 60 people to get 8 jobs. So every pilot program, we tried to have different set of people. Okay? And what this did, it allowed us to be up front with the new car, engineering-wise. We went to Detroit every day and sat in meetings and argued with engineers about design for assembly, DFA. That was a big deal because the Japanese always designed their car for the ease of the operator. We never did that. We never had that in our process. The engineer would just design something, and they didn't care about design for assembly. So that's the reason we were so successful here in Lansing. I'm telling you, each department had PDT people, and if we hadn't had that, we could have never pulled off the things we did here at Lansing. And I remember the last, the Alero and the Pontiac Grand Am, when those come out brand new, can't remember what year. Must have been 96 or something like that, the new ones. Remember that big changeover we had?
Wasn't that 85?
85 was the first ones, but then the other one where we changed the plant member. And what we did was we brought on a new product and still had the old product at full line speed. And that changeover, when we went from the Grand Am to the Grand Am and Alero, because of all the work that the PDTs did in each area, paint, body, trim, chassis, we pulled off a turnaround from the old car to the new car in 18 days. And in the past, Toyota had the world record of 21. We did it in 18. And we turned that car on, and it came off the line in great shape because of all the pre-work that we did. And we started at phase zero, which is the clays. And this is the first time that they've ever let hourly people in the clay room for Oldsmobile and Pontiac. They've never had hourly people in there. And if they were in there, they had to keep their mouth shut and couldn't say anything. All they could do is observe, because these designers are like prima donnas at GM, and they didn't want anybody telling them anything. Well, with our program, because the engineers, and we've been in it since 84 with PDTs, all the engineering world knew all the PDT people. So, like I said, we changed every pilot time, but the reason we had a successful startup in all our pilot programs is because of PDTs. That includes our new plant in Delta. I think they're going to come out a heck of a lot better than Lansing Grand River, because we still have PDTs, the 602. 652 didn't choose to do that at the Lansing Grand River plant. And it showed in their quality at first. As the car went along, they corrected everything and got it going. But all the little things that weren't taken care of because the PDTs weren't there. The Saturn that just came off the line at the new plant looks wonderful. So, and I've been talking to the PDT guys, and they said it's because of the upfront involvement. So that's probably the biggest thing I wanted to get through was PDTs are the backbone of 602.
You mentioned the clay room. Where is that, in Warren?
Yes, or? It's down in Warren, and these people had to drive there. They had their own, they'd get their own, check out their own car, go to meetings. I didn't have to be with them. They knew how to handle themselves in a meeting. They knew how to take notes. I brought a letter to the thing today showing you the appreciation of the engineering world for our PDT people. Well, it's, yeah, it's down in Warren, and it's a big room, and it's actually got a clay car there, and you look at it and see if, it, you know, you can improve on it, and we did.
I think last week when we tried to do this interview, you had mentioned one of the hourly guys actually spoke up and said something in the clay room.
Yes.
Actually, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. On the Grand Am, they had the fender and hood up towards the windshield, making a radical change. And then down at the headlamp, we had three places we had to fit the fender, the hood, and the headlamp. Well, there's no way you can fit the up top part and the bottom part. There's no way you can fit that without having a gap, you know, and it would be a nightmare for assembly. So Brian Pertler pointed that out, and they actually changed the clay to represent a better line for us, so we only had to fit the headlamp instead of the headlamp and the fender at the windshield area. So yeah, that was a big deal right there, and the engineers agreed and changed it. That
so
would have been a 602 nightmare.
602 guy,
yeah,
actually was able to get the prima donna to
mm-hmm.
listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dick, when you hired in, you said that the body shop was dark and smoky and you wanted to avoid that, but as a PDT manager, you worked in the body shop. Could you tell a little bit about the body shop?
Sure. I worked in trim for probably 20 years, and then I was asked to go to the body shop as a general foreman. So I said, okay. So I went down. Spent the remaining 15 years or so in the body shop. And at our last changeover we had, we redid the body shop completely. We put in new lighting system, put in new air circulation. Our body shop turned out to be just as clean as the trim shop. It was a wonderful thing that they did engineering-wise. And that's the changeover that I was talking about earlier, that we actually beat Toyota. And we had to have cooperation from every single person in the body shop because we would we shortened the lineup by half so we could work on new products on one side of the roped-off area and run the regular product on the other side and still maintain production. We did this for a year or so, and it was wonderful. I couldn't believe the cooperation from everybody. And I mean, we got cement trucks pouring cement next to 10 foot away from a guy doing his job on a line. And we tried to do a lot of the real crappy stuff, like breaking up cement with all the dust and stuff on the weekends, so we wouldn't have affect employees too much. But we even cut a hole in the front of the plant so we could drive trucks in right into the body shop, big cement trucks and stuff. It was one heck of a accomplishment in the body shop. And we couldn't have done it without every single hourly rates help. And we had some problems, but we worked through it. And the union helped a lot, too. So our body shop turned out to be really nice, just like Trim. And I was happy to be down there.
You mentioned also earlier about when we were discussing the talent show, you said you went over to Oldsmobile and asked that Fisherbody be able to join the talent show. Was that when Fisherbody turned into Lansing Car Assembly? Or what did you think of the name changes? I think it was BOP and then BOC and the LCA. And
I didn't like the name change. Fisherbody is always Fisherbody to me and always will be. But when we went to BOC, or I can't remember, Lansing Car Assembly, whatever, that's when I went over there and said, okay, we're all together now. Can we get in the talent show? And they said, absolutely, we could do that. So we had a lot of help from Tom Police at that time with that talent show. He helped us out a lot. He was general superintendent at Fisherbody, Tom Police. And he was an old Oldsmobile guy forever, but he sure helped us out to break down the wall between Oldsmobile and Fisherbody.
Was there a big wall?
Yeah, I think there was. Yep. And even today, I'm still a Fisherbody guy, not an Oldsmobile guy. But we took care of all that. You know, we intermingled people and supervisors and general supervisors, and it's kind of all one after that.
What did you think of the skilled tradespeople in the plant? Did you ever need jobs done by them, government work jobs? How did you view them as employees?
The skilled trade people, I really got involved with skilled trade people more so in the body shop than in Trim because of all the robotics. We had 200 or 300 robots down there, and I worked really close with the skilled trade guys because I was in weekend work. You know, I worked like 7 days a week for a year with the PDT guys, putting new programs into robots, and they were a great bunch, I'll tell you. And you have to work close with them. You're either with them or against them. If you're against them, they can kill you on downtime and stuff like that. But they really had some good ideas, and they would come up with, you know, if you have a robot cell with four robots and it takes, you know, 1 minute to do the job, they would figure out little ways to save the robot so it would pick up another spot weld or do something else, you know. And in the body shop, we had a chance where you didn't have a Trim of having robots pick up more welds, and you could eliminate people that way. So if you knew your skilled trades people, and if they were really good at their job, you could have them go into a cell and pick up, you know, a spot weld here, a spot weld there, and go to the next cell and do the same thing. And then what we did was try to get the big guns out of the body shop that were real hard to work with, the heavy guns. Even though they're on a balancer, you had certain maneuvers that you had to twist them and put them in. I worked really hard to get those jobs on a robot, even though if it eliminated people, fine, but get those hard jobs on a robot. That's where they belong. They don't belong on a person. And we did a lot of work with that, and it helped out a lot. And the skilled trade guys did a heck of a job. Got along with them good.
So you considered them good workers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, you hear about all these lazy guys don't... I'm telling you, when that line went down in the body shop, within a minute, we'd have skilled trades there. The millwrights, you know, we had a car off the line or something, the millwrights would be there. They didn't care if we helped them put a car back on the track. They didn't call the committee man. You know, we were worried about and concerned about output. And the longer the line was down, you know, we lost cars. So they were involved in a lot of things. And we had those guys... because I worked the weekends with them, with the PDT, knew them real well. And they were actually concerned about downtime. Now, a lot of people say skilled trades are lazy, they just sit around all the time. They might sit around, but I liked them sitting around, because when they were sitting around, I was running good. So that never bothered me. It bothered a lot of other people, but it didn't bother me. So that's why I got along with them good.
They were up and busting butt when you needed them.
That's right. Exactly. Yep.
What is one of your best memories of the Fisher Body Plant?
I think one of the best memories was when we turned the plant around in 18 days and beat Toyota. That would be one of the highlights of my career, I think.
Do you have a happiest or a saddest or funniest moment?
I would say the happiest is when we presented the PDT guys an award for doing their job. And I think one of the funny ones was we had an elevator on the main floor in trim that was by the offices. When you went to the offices, there was the elevator there. I can remember we had a film crew come in, and they wanted us to drive a Grand Am out of that elevator real fast with the lights on, and it was something to do with their little presentation they were making. So I had to get in that elevator, and they said, okay, go, and I had to drive that Grand Am down the main aisle, and they took a picture and had slamming brakes. But that was fun. That was a funny time there.
Dick, is there anything that we've not asked you that you'd like to comment on?
No, I just, at my retirement party, the one thing I mentioned, and I was very sincere about it, was, you know, I worked here for 37 years, and I got a paycheck every day. I never missed a paycheck. You know, a lot of people complain about, you know, the Fisher Body or General Motors, da 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 da. But for 37 years, I got a paycheck every time I'm supposed to get one. You know, that's amazing.
I'd also like to comment, you have another job. I'm looking at your shirt. And how many years have you been a firefighter?
Oh, yeah. 35. I'm going on 35 right now. Years at Delta Township Fire Department. And another part of the Fisher Body was getting the ERT team together. I helped do that, which is a very important part of the
business.
What
is the ERT team?
ERT is Emergency Response Team. A bunch of folks that have radios on. They're in all the areas, paint, body, trim. And if there's an emergency of any kind, a fire, or somebody gets cut, or somebody passes out, or somebody has a heart attack, these folks respond immediately along with plant protection. And that has carried through to Lansing Grand River. They're still doing that. And I don't know about our new plant, but I would hope that would be one thing they do, carry on.
I would hope so, too.
Yeah, they have their little ambulance truck, and you know they're well-trained. And I think that's still going on.
Because I think Janet Wilcox is still
Is involved in that a lot. Yeah.
Speaking of the emergency response team, did you ever see anybody in the plant get hurt?
Yeah. Body shop one weekend, a robot, which you can't, you know, there's procedures you do when you walk into a robot cell. You shut down, you know, and you have to lock out and all that stuff. I saw a robot hit a guy in the head, and he had everything done right. I don't know why it happened that way, but it did. And didn't just knocked his helmet off. He had a helmet on, cut himself a little bit. But body shop would get a lot of cuts and stuff. But it's a lot better now with Kevlar gloves and all sleeves and all that stuff. So we've improved a lot. Saw a couple of heart attacks. Saw a guy die in the valve top area. And, we tried everything we could to get him back, and we never got him back. So he just must have had a massive heart attack. But other than that, I was at one fire at Fisher Body. That's when we had to wear white shirts and ties. And I don't know if you ever noticed, but when the sprinkler system goes off or you pull a hose in that water, it's the crappiest water because it's setting those lines forever and it stinks. I had that crap all over my white shirt and all over me, but we put the fire out quick. But had no home change that day. But usually, I think we're pretty safe in the plants now. I mean, there's a lot of things we do right.
Were you ever called out of the plant for a fire in Delta Township?
No, but I came in late probably three times because of a fire in Delta Township, but I was never called out.
Well, Dick, I really appreciate this interview. I thank you so much for coming back, actually, to do it again for us, and appreciate your time.
Yes, no problem. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.